right, so what else do you want to talk about?
What do you guys think of just kind of what they've learned? And if we are, I've actually put it out to the other athletic trainers in the district about, you know, making the AP course for sports medicine. And so one of them is already emailed Dr. Is it Harper?
Yeah, Dr. Ronnie Harper, and Dutchtown High School, Louisiana.
Yeah, and so she already emailed him this morning to kind of see what the response is. Great. So I'm going to let somebody else kind of take up the lead on that.
Sure.
And moving forward there. So just your feedback to me from what you perceived my kids knew and moving that direction.
I'm impressed with what they knew. You know, they obviously have paid attention, and they know some basic first aid and life-saving skills. They know about CPR and AED, and they know about the Heimlich maneuver, and they know about the bones, and they know about muscles and the different systems, and they know, I think that, you know, they would be, you know, I think they're very qualified first responders at this point.
I think and I've told students this, if you don't have your basic anatomy, I mean, anatomy dictates acute care or any care.
Right.
If you don't know what bones and what muscles are, and you can always go into what ligaments, what nerves, but if you don't understand the underlying anatomy, you can't make decisions. You can't evaluate. So if they're hurting in the mid thigh, there's only two things realistically it's going to be if it's a sports injury. It's going to be a muscle or a bone. So if they understand that, then I think their foundations are there. At least, and the question is, does it make your job easier? Or does it make it more difficult? So I think by giving them a foundation, it's going to take some of the things off of you that they can, you know, practice their evaluations and understand the anatomy. And it's going to help them in the future as well. Hopefully going into some kind of a medical field, they'll have a very good basic understanding of anatomy and how physiology occurs and everything else from a high school level.
It would be really interesting too, is that as you kind of extrapolate what you're doing here to track these students and to see, you know, if they are accepted to a university, what university they go to, what's their major. If they choose to pursue athletic trainer, they're going to pursue it at an undergraduate or graduate level. And if they do pursue it undergraduate and graduate level, what profession or what area of specialization are they going to go into? And, you know, all those different things. I think that would be really interesting for you to look at and be able to track and then come back to your, you know, principal in your school district and, you know, to the state and say, look, this is something that we're doing here, you know, at Pasadena High School. And, you know, this is the courses that we're offering, and this has helped them get into college, and it's made them, you know, a little bit more versatile. And as we track, I mean, obviously we'd have to, you know, you'd have to track them over probably 5 or 10 years.
Right.
You know, and I don't, but to be able to, you know, perform those metrics. Hey, Bill's back.
All right.
Now,
here it comes. It's the trifecta of four. That's what I like to say. It's the four-part trilogy.
Hello, everybody.
Hi, Bill. Hey, listen, real quick, I just want to give a shout-out to Mike and Bubba, two of the athletic trainers over at Memorial Hermann. You know, Mike and Bubba were both inducted into the GHATS Hall of Honor, and Bubba is one of our preceptors. And Memorial Hermann Ironman Sports Medicine Institute is one of our partners for the program. So congratulations to both of them.
Mike Vara?
Yeah, Mike Vara and James Bubba Wilson were both inducted to the GHATS Hall of Honor, which is a great accomplishment.
I've known Mike Vara pretty much my entire professional career because he used to work at Clements High School, and I worked at George Bush High School. And, you know, obviously I was a rookie and he was in his finishing years in the public schools, because then he went to Richmond Bone and Joint, and then they got bought by Memorial Hermann. And so I've known Mike for a long time. So it's been good to know him and, you know, good to see them get that reward and everything like that. And I know he does a lot. He's always been involved with GHATS. And so it's really cool.
You know, there's that quote, if I'm able to see farther, it's because I stand on the shoulders of giants. And so Mike is one of those giants. Bubba is one of those giants. And so, you know, for young guys like us, Bill's one of those giants. And so for young guys like us to be able to, you know, stand on their shoulders. And really, I mean, I say this with all sincerity, to see where the profession has gone, to see what we're able to do now, to see where it's going as far as education and the impact that we're making, and that the general public is now recognizing athletic training and it's moving out of its traditional roots, and companies and organizations are hiring athletic trainers because they see the benefit of what we're able to do. And so that's an area that is, you know, that is only possible because the people that came before us really plowed through those roads before. So thank you to all of you. including you, Bill. Thank you, sir. Bill's rocking his G Hats t-shirt.
Yeah, I'm kind of slumming today in my dress.
I think you've earned it.
That's okay, man.
Yeah. Sorry, I get my phone ringing, so I'm trying to see if there's some Twitter.
Okay.
It's just people retweeting and favoriting things. Nobody, no questions or comments. I'm going to keep looking, though.
Okay.
Cool.
Because usually George runs this part. And so.
Now he's gone. George got vaporized. Bill, what do you want to talk about?
Hey, I'm... so, let's see.
Listen, we are all athletic training all the time.
Hey, okay, let's talk injuries here.
I feel like I'm on CNN, and they always bring what the topic is. They always bring that one person back, and he seems to have an opinion on everything. So I feel like that's what Dr. Yell and I are. Is we're here to talk about whatever topic you want.
What do you think about the weather today? Well, you know, I think it's
been raining.
Yeah, the weather's been pretty bad. Speaking of bad, you know, athletic trainers are trained in environmental conditions, which include lightning detection and
Oh yeah, that's true. I'm getting pretty good at that.
Yeah.
So I think I'm as good as a weatherman.
I can pretty much turn everything back to athletic training.
Yeah. That's what let's talk here.
Yeah,
okay. What is y'all's views on the news of the day of the Dallas Cowboys and the OTAs and veterans doing practice, and now Dallas just lost Sean Lee for the year? Because I saw it on video.
Yeah, they just
were running a play, and rookie lineman just kind of ran over him, and he just buckled underneath it and tore his ACL.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Dr. Knobloch, you have a great quote that somebody that mentored you.
Oh, Sandy Miller. I know what you're talking about.
Sandy Miller.
I'll give you the background. I was having a frustrating day back when I was a clinician, and I was mad because the coaches were mad at me because their players weren't back. And I kind of went to talk to Sandy Miller, who we all know at SFA, legendary individual, great guy, not one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet. And I was just telling him, I'm tired of, you know, coaches on me and they want so-and-so back and I'm doing everything I can and they're not, and I can't get the athlete back and they're still mad. And he said, Mark, you've got to understand something. We're not getting them hurt. And it just like a weight went off my shoulders, because I never, as naive as it sounds, I never thought of it that way. I thought it was, I've got to do everything in my power to get them back. It's my fault, you know, if they're not back. And when he said that, it just dawned on me. He's like, you're right. They're not getting hurt in our drills. They're not getting hurt with our techniques. And when he said that, I just thought, I mean, that's almost become a mantra. It's in the back of my mind every time I would approach a coach to say, oh, so-and-so's out. I was expecting that, you know, well, when can they be back? Why are they hurt? When can they get to be ready? And my answer was just, hey, coach, they didn't get hurt in my drills. So when you talk about that, you know, and it's more of from an aspect of when the coaches are on you about why they're not back, it goes back to, you know, they were hurt doing drills that you wanted them to do. And I always remember those. It's the football coach. And I don't mean to pick on football, but it's the football certain coach's mentality that the more you hit in practice, the more you'll be ready for the game. And I just, it blows my mind, because where do most injuries happen? It's in practice. Obviously, there's more time spent in practice. But I don't mean to get on a tangent, because I haven't seen the news or the video you're talking about. But
don't worry, we're all tangents now, so no rules.
But when they're getting hurt, it's this mindset of, they got hurt, so when's the athletic trainer going to have you ready? And we're given the hand we're dealt. You know, if you give us a crappy hand, it's going to take a long time for me to get a good hand, which means your athlete's back. If it's a minor injury or we can support it enough, you know, and they won't have a lifelong or injuries and they can contribute to the team, we'll get them back pretty quickly. But again, you know, what Dr. Yellen was saying is it brings back that mantra I now have of, they didn't get hurt in our drills. So I can only do, you know.
Hey, I got a good answer. ACLs, anywhere around 8 months.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, that's unfortunate, because
I tell them 12 to 18.
The problem with an ACL or a broken bone is that's black and white. You know, you're out 6 months, or you're out 8 months, or an Achilles, you're out a year. It's the frustrating ones for the coaches is it's a pulled muscle. Oh, when I pulled my muscle, a sports hernia, when I pulled my muscle or tweaked my ankle, I was back the next day. My two answers to that, I would say to the coaches, coach, weren't you just complaining about your ankle the other day? And second of all, is there's so many factors involved into an ankle pull or an ankle rolling your ankle or a muscle pull that you cannot compare. It's apples and oranges. It's a different inflammation process in each individual. It's a different degree, most likely. Yes, he walked off, but that doesn't mean it's not a severe injury. I mean, an Achilles tear. The one I saw, the kid hops off the court, says it didn't even hurt. Just did the classic, oh, it feels like, you know, somebody thumped me on the back of the heel with a hammer. And it didn't hurt at all. So the coach is like, well, when's he going to be back? And then we had to go to the next day and said, he's out for a year. So.
What? He hopped off the field.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, I saw that on ESPN today, what you're talking about. And it never made any sense to me of why we're going to run these athletes and put them through drills. Because really, you know, especially when you get to the professional level, you've invested millions of dollars. They've invested a lot of time and effort and money to get them to where they are, to give them this opportunity to be drafted to a professional sport. And hopefully they can use that. And if they're smart, right, they can use that money and, you know, invest it wisely. And, you know, they're, congratulations, you can live the rest of your life, very wealthy individual. But here's a situation where this gentleman is out and he's running the drills and he's practicing. And, yeah, okay, albeit it may have been one of those freak accidents. But more than likely, if it wasn't in a competitive situation where, you know, there are other people around and you've got to make some, you know, compromises in your biomechanics, more than likely this doesn't happen. And so one of the suggestions I always gave to coaches was, you know, coach, especially at the high school level, if your game's going to be on a Friday night, let's just take basic inflammation, right? 72 hours. So if you played Friday night, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, you've now, that's 72 hours of inflammation. Okay. Tuesday, run these kids at 25 to 50%. Wednesday, run these kids at 50 to 75%. Thursday, back them off. Why? Because on Friday, you're going to run them at 100%. And so the philosophy of we're going to practice at 100%, that's okay. And it was okay, you know, if I look at, you know, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago, that philosophy was okay. And the reason why is because the athletes now are just bigger, faster, and stronger. And it's simple physics. If I have somebody that's 6'4", 6'5", 320 pounds, and can run a 40-yard dash in 5 seconds, and that person collides with another individual that, let's say, is, you know, 6 feet, 225, but runs a 4.5 40. Okay, mass times velocity equals, right? And we all know this. Mm-hmm. And so now things really start to get hurt. And as we have better research and we start to see the impact of these collisions, and when I say collisions, people need to understand there's a major difference between a collision sport and a contact sport. So as we start to see collisions and we start to equate, each one of these hits is the equivalent of a 20 to 30 mile an hour car crash every day for 10, 15, 20 years. The body cannot heal itself. It starts to break down. And you're starting to see the end result. And so it's really interesting to start to see some of the different mindset of, well, geez, you know, if I'm, and again, it's one of those things where this is a situation, it was probably, if I remember correctly, it's, you know, it's helmet and shorts and a t-shirt. And don't get me wrong when I tell you, I'm all for the theory of specificity. I think that works brilliantly. But let these guys run without, you know, all the competition. The other question I always got was, boy, if we don't practice how we play, how are we going to know, especially in a situation like football? How are these kids going to learn how to hit? Trust me, they're gonna learn how to hit. It's in you. The first time you take a hit, you decide right then. I can either hang or I can't, mm-hmm. right? I took a hit and I can get up from this and I'm okay to go back. Or I took a hit and that hurt and I never want to do this again. That hurt too much. I don't want to be a part of it. Which is why, like in freshman football, sophomore football, you see the reaction that you see. And any athletic trainer that's at a high school level sees that. 14, 15-year-old kid gets whacked for the first time and is screaming in pain. My ankle, my leg, my shoulder, my whatever it is. Why? They haven't been hit like that. They haven't been conditioned to take the pain like that. And there's a physiological principle that goes back to the pain you know, sensory mechanism, afferent, efferent, the central biasing, theory, that you have to be able to condition your brain to be able to work under those types of conditions. So, you know, unfortunately, this is a situation where this particular young man had a real shot at, you know, being a professional athlete, and unfortunately, it's not gonna work out. Now, what's to say that you can't prevent these things from happening in a game? You can't. You know, when these injuries happen, and I'm always reminded of this young man from Tulane, I forget his name, but, you know, he ended up hitting, it was an axial loading situation, and he's a complete quadriplegic. And, I mean, what a horrible story. And he's been really inspirational now, where I think he just got picked up with the New Orleans Saints, and it's outstanding, and he's really developed a situation where he can go in and talk about his experiences and all those other things. But again, that's one of those kind of freak accidents, and you can't necessarily prevent that from happening. But as the athletic trainer, we need to have more say, especially in the sports setting, about this is the best possibility for preventing injury. And we're really good when it comes to heat illness, and we're really good when it comes to hydration, and we're really good when it comes to bracing and taping, and we're really good after the fact. But what about during? What about, you know, at the small colleges or even the big colleges? It's a Wednesday. These guys are going to play on a Saturday, and they're in full pads, running at full speed, and they're young men, and they want to kill each other.
How about high school setting?
Oh, yeah.
So,
I mean, it happens all the time. And you see these kids hitting full contact. By the time they get to Friday or Saturday,
they're worn out.
They're worn out. They can't perform anymore. So,
well, one of the things that our coaches say on that is that their kids don't know how to practice in shorts and helmets. So, like, they're just lazy when they're in shorts and helmets. You know, so the kids are screwing around. So that's why they put them in full pads, so that they'll practice harder. So what's your take on that? I mean, I understand, yes, you know, at some point during the week, it's okay to contact. But like with the professionals, I think it's, 17 days of contact practice? So once a week.
Well, look what's happening at the NCAA level. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
You know, NCAA is doing, what are they doing? Now they're really limiting the amount, especially during spring football, especially during summer football. You are now limited to how many times you can practice in full pads, and what times of the day that you can practice, and what times of situations that you can be in. And so that old mentality of, you know, these kids are just lazy and they don't know how to perform, that's not true. You know, these kids are not lazy. They're out in the middle of practice. Now, some obviously are lazier than others. Okay, I'll give you that. And then there's also something to be said for specificity of training. Okay, you're not going to play in shorts and a t-shirt. So you're going to play in these full pads, and you need to understand how to move in these situations. I'm all for that. Put them in full pads and let them, you know, work through those progressions in full pads so they know what it's like, you know, if you're a quarterback, to throw with your pads on, to throw with your, you know, thigh pads on, you know, your girdle on, to be able to run in those situations. I'm all for it. But stay away from contact, those collisions, as much as possible. The big difference between colliding with another human being and colliding with a pad. You know, if I'm going to set up a situation where you're a running back and you've got to run through the gauntlet of all the pads, okay, there's a big difference between you running into a foam pad and you really accelerating into that versus you running into another human being and you're both accelerating into that.
Correct.
I hate to turn this scientific, but I'm really curious now if there's any research about a correlation between the amount of hitting that's done in practice and success rates, and to see if it's a mentality or if there's actual research that shows we hit 4 days a week and we're a more successful program, or is it the other way around? The kids are more rested and everything. And
depends on what level you're talking about. If you're talking about college level, then the level of the ability is about the, is about level.
Mm-hmm.
But if you get in the high school level, you got those who have the better talent and those who don't have talent because of economics, where they live, and what your pool, what your...
Well, maybe if you could try and group them into those same, you know, we have five schools that are Division 3A that the coach's philosophy is you hit every day. And we have five schools in level three, and maybe a similar school district that hits 2 days a week or has a philosophy and probably a younger coach that says, you know, we're only going to hit on 1 day a week, full pads, and look at the levels of success. I'd be curious to see if there is a hitting correlation that the teams that hit more are more successful or not. Somebody out there may know. I don't know. Tweet it.
Well, I was just looking at Twitter and Mike Hopper, he said, does he want to give a shout out to you guys? He said he listened.
What's up, Mike?
He listened to the last one where I talked to you guys and, you know, said it was a good conversation. And he just want to say shout out. Thanks for what you're doing. And
well, thank Jeremy and thank this high school because this is an opportunity for us to come on, but you've set it all up. So, and my village as well. So
he just want to say good job. Give y'all a shout out. And
thanks, Mike.
If you had a Twitter, he would probably mention you there in Twitter, but you don't have Twitter yet. So
well, I'm not in the Twitter.
I was actually thinking about that this morning. Maybe
my son's on Instagram.
So he actually said something about, I need to get you guys on the Twit, which I think that's a talk show.
Did he call us a Twit?
No, I think that's a talk show. I think it's a talk show, but I'm not sure. So Mike, what is the Twit? You can tell us that later. I think it's a talk show, and I think he was just saying you guys interact well and do well on the mic, I think.
Okay.
Maybe he was calling,
he's calling us names.
I hope that's what it means.
Yeah, or he was calling you Twit.
Yeah, you guys are really good participants, or you're Twits.
I'm curious on what you two in the high school setting think of the whole hit. The more you hit, the better you are. I mean, you have to deal with it every day. I didn't even have football when I was an athletic trainer to college, but what do you think? You've been here 34 years. So.
Well, here at our school, I think personally, I don't think they should hit as much. But then again, there's the other both sides. Since I know our athletes, I know our coaches, I know our what talent level we have, and our talent level is not the Pearland talent. We don't have the pool of athletes to pull from with the exceptional skill kids. I mean, we every once in a while get a one or two or three, you know, lucky if we can get five. I mean, it's not downplaying our school. It's just the talent pool we get to pull from. As far as hitting, I've seen it when they don't hit. The fundamentals slack off and the kids get really lazy. They get hurt that way because they go against the talent level and their fundamentals are off. Our kids basically have to have fundamentals down pat.
Well, don't you think, Bill, sorry to interrupt, but don't you think there's a big difference between practicing fundamentals and hitting full contact, right? We can still practice fundamentals.
I think they
and
need
good
to
technique.
Be in full. I think they really need to be in full pads if they're getting used to, if they're understanding how to, you know, move around in their uniform, but late in the season, no. I think they're already used to that. The weather's not hot anymore. You know, there's all different kinds of philosophies about it. They could do their practices where they're limiting, you know, the drills to where they're not doing team. They can do team without hitting, without taking down. And our coaches really don't. They don't have the kids take them. They hit, they blow the whistle, you know, but you have your gung-ho athletes every once in a while that'll cold cock a kid because, you know, I'm macho.
Ego.
I want to be that. Yeah. I want to show off and all that. But they do team. We usually, during the season, we have one practice a week that really is the hard practice. Mm-hmm. The others basically go back a little bit and they tone down.
And what day is that? That's usually about Wednesday.
Tuesday.
That's good. That's good space.
That's good, yeah. Then they tell me
that's really good.
Because last year we had like a bunch of Thursday games, which I love Thursday games.
All right. So my thought is we're dealing with high school kids. And so Mike is listening. And so he's interacting. So I'm going to make sure I mention the people that are interacting as much as possible. He was saying, I understand that hitting is necessary in football, but we must be careful to teach fundamentals, most importantly.
Correct.
Hashtag. Go ahead. Do your hashtag symbol.
Hashtag
the SMB. And so my thought is that, you know, these at the freshman level, I think it should be honestly a little bit more. They should be able to hit a little bit more because they aren't used to it. They need to get conditioned. A lot of our kids don't play little league football. You know, this is the first time they're playing sports. And so let them hit 2 or 3 days a week to get used to it. And then after that, as the season goes on, you know, just let
but more of the fundamental.
Yeah, contact 1 day a week. But hitting the pad is going to be a lot better. Going through the skills with full pads on is a lot better, but it's not about whether or not the pads are on that make you lazy. It's whether or not you structure the practice so that every kid is involved. You're going through rotations.
I think that's exactly what I was. That's exactly what I was thinking. Is why are these kids
just standing around?
Are standing around? Is there something they can? Is there a coach or a student assistant that can be working with them on just coming out of your stance or something? If they do stand around and for 10 minutes while the coaches are working with the first team, and all the scrubs, if for lack of a better term, are standing there for 20 minutes. Of course, they're good. They're high schoolers. They're middle schoolers. They're going to start talking and laughing.
Pulling the ball around.
Keep them involved.
Yeah, with the intermediates are talking. They only have 4 coaches.
Right.
And they've got 4 teams.
And the other thing too about, I think it's a multifaceted answer that I agree with you, right? And we talked about this. I disagree with hitting 3 or 4 times a week.
Yeah.
And if you are going to hit, my recommendation is hitting at 25% speed, 50% speed. And if I'm really going to condition them to take some hits, I'm going to do it with some excess pads. So I'm going to hit them with some other padded areas, tackling dummies, those types of things.
So you think that hitting the pads is going to prepare them for being hit in the game? Because that was the thing that you're mentioning, and it sounded like you were all in favor of hitting because you have to condition them to really be hit.
I'm in favor of conditioning them to take the hit. Because here are a couple things that you need to understand. It's just like in baseball. It's just like anything else. Let's say in baseball, you're going to dedicate part of your practice to being hit by a baseball. At least any coach that I've ever been a part of. Hey, look, we're not going to really focus on this for an extended period of time. But, if an 80-mile-an-hour fastball comes your way and happens to hit you, how do you protect yourself from that, right? And one of the reasons why Little League kids now wear chest protectors is because they are not conditioned to turn away from it. Their immediate reaction is to turn into it, and now you're hitting the chest and you've got, commotio cordis. Okay, fine. That's really why there's chest protectors. Okay, so now let's take that concept and go to football. Okay, so you've got a 14, 15-year-old kid who structurally is not mature enough to take those types of hits. The brain is not developed enough to take those types of hits. You're going to ask this kid on a Wednesday or a Thursday, because it's frost off really, to go and to participate in full speed. And we take simple physics. So what's the best way that I can condition them? Yes, I'm going to put them in pads. And yes, I'm going to have them work in those different areas. And I'm going to talk about fundamentals, right? We're going to hit what we see. And we're going to talk about coming out of stance. We're going to talk about proper tackling techniques, head on the side, butt down, lift and thrust into it. You always see what you hit, all those different things. And so how do I condition them to really take the hit and to really take the pain? Okay, I'll give you, if the game is going to be on a Wednesday or Thursday, on Monday, let's run about 50% and let's run into each other. Everything else, I'm going to hit you with a tackling dummy, or I'm going to hit you with a blocking pad, or I'm going to hit you. Because I guarantee, look, you're going to get hit with one of those at a 14 or 15-year-old kid. It's going to hurt. And so what I don't want them to do is I don't want them to be scared of getting hit, because when they're scared of getting hit and right before they get hit, they alter their biomechanics and they tense up. You're likely to get more hit from that, more hurt from that. So my recommendation is always let the kids play and let them practice in these different environments. Specificity of training is a huge deal for me. Especially in the beginning of the season, I was always asked questions. Geez, it's like the middle of the day. It's super hot. Should we go out and practice? Yes. Why? Well, not for an extended period of time. Make sure that there's proper hydration, but you need to get them prepared and operating in gear, adding another 20, 30 pounds to you. And it's going to be a hot environment. So when you start the football season in August, right, and it's a hot, humid environment, especially in this part of the country. And now it's the third quarter and all these kids are cramping up. Why? They haven't acclimatized yet. They haven't been, there's mm-hmm. no specificity of training. So I think it's a fine balance. I think the one thing that we need to get away from is, if you want to be a real man or if you want to be a real athlete, this is what you need to do. And we're going to hit. And this culture of, it's almost like this gladiator culture. And I say this, what's really interesting is that my dad was a head football coach for 20 years. I grew up on the football field. I played football my entire life. And so I understand what it is that you're trying to accomplish. On the back end of it, we need to make sure that we're doing it very safely and that we're effective. Because what do we really want? We want these kids to have a good time and learn something. What are you really going to learn from football? right? Besides, I learned how to block or I learned how to throw a ball. You really are operating in a strenuous environment, you know, in a team environment. You learn to rely on one another. You learn to rely on yourselves. And you take those lessons and you move forward in life. And that's what life is really all about, right?
Yeah, the stress and the pressure.
Right, to operate, right. And so, you know, I think it's a fine line, you know, and I see the coaches as a whole really moving towards, you know, or away from what it used to be, like, you know, suck it up, throw some dirt on it. Pain is just weakness leaving the body. I understand that to a point. But, you know, when these athletes are really injured and you're asking them to do things at 14, 15, 16 years old, that structurally they're just not capable of doing, mentally and emotionally and physically, they're just not capable of doing because they're 14, 15, 16, 17 years old. I mean, let's take, I don't know, let's take one of these major universities, 100 and something thousand people in the stands, right? Open, right? They're packed. Let's take
U of H in the new stadium.
Yeah, let's put University of Houston, brand new stadium, 45,000, 50,000 people, screaming fans. You're an 18-year-old kid. You've played in front of 300 people before. And now you're going to come running out, 45,000, 50,000 people. That's what we need to prepare them for. How are you going to operate? They already know how to hit. They already know how to block. They already know all these other things. Let's have them operate under this type of stress. So that's just me.
Dr. Yellen, he brought up specificity of training, and I just had to laugh because one of my biggest pet peeves in athletic training, and I don't want to be called out, but the 6-minute mile for basketball players. What does that have to do anything with basketball? What does a slow, you know, a jog have to do with how good of a basketball player, what kind of fitness level you're in for basketball? And I always thought, every year I'd see this in the men's team, the women's team, I'd hear about in high schools, and it's just some kind of standard that's out there. Either it's dichotomous. You either pass by getting in under 6 minutes or you fail by it takes longer than 6 minutes. I said, how does that translate to what level of fitness? Why are they not doing short sprint zippers or, you know, there's other terms that they use. It just seems to me when specificity of training is where so much time could be spent, saved, I guess, focusing on what they're doing in athletics. Now, you know, football and hitting, that's different. But when he's talked about that, I just had to laugh because I've seen that so much. And it just, I think it's this old school mentality. Well, this is what I did when I was a player, so this is what I'm going to do as a coach. You know, and I apologize if anybody's out there that just loves the 6-minute mile. It's just,
or how about a 12-minute mile?
Is it 12-minute?
Well, I don't know. When I was in college, my first year at Sam, head coach was Billy Tidwell.
I know I could drive a mile.
Billy Tidwell was the head coach. And I show up, and our first day, they had the veterans come out, and they had to run, you know, so many laps in 12 minutes. And then they had all these 125 freshmen that walked on and came out, and they were falling out. I mean, they never had to run 12 minutes at one time, mm-hmm. ever. Mm-hmm. You know, what? I didn't understand it. I'm 18 years old. I'm like going, what are we doing? Why are we, you know,
yeah,
doing that? And then when I came to work here at Pasadena, here's a good example of hydration. I came to work at Pasadena in 1980. They gave them a 16-ounce styrofoam cup of flake ice. That mm-hmm. was their break. I'm like going, what?
Mm-hmm.
What?
This ain't gonna work.
No, that ain't gonna work.
When I was in high school, and not as a student trainer, as an athlete, our football coach told us, "You'll get a drink when you do it right." I mean, this is after me. This was in 1990, to age myself, but we'd have all these drills, and we're like, "Come get a drink." It's like, "You'll get a drink when you do it right." It's like, well, think about what's going on. We're fatigued. We're frustrated. Maybe let us get some fluid in us, and we will do it right. It was like withholding, you know, and it's an old school mentality again of withholding fluid from them. Back then, it was common, and you know, nobody ever had a problem in our school, but it's that old school mentality of that's the way we're going to do it. And I think now you see a lot more of unlimited water breaks or whatever. There's always water, but what did it take to get there? It always makes me think of, what will it take to get a stop sign put at this intersection? Well, when somebody dies, mm-hmm. you know,
and that's
just,
usually what happens.
It's
with
terrible.
The hydration.
It's yeah. terrible. And that's what I think this evidence-based practice component of the NATA or the BOC is, and Katie is coming to, is we're trying to get athletic trainers understand that evaluate what the research says and understand it and be able to make your own, the best decisions possible, best practices, and not, this is the way I learned it. We put ice on and that's it. You know, what about other possibilities? What is the research showing? And I like to see that because it gets out of that old school mentality. And I think that's very beneficial for our profession. So
jumping back to the contact, Mike had mentioned, it said something like our definitions of contact are different. And so I asked him for clarification. And his thought is full out contact, no more than 2 times per week, and full contact plus 1 game a week. So 1 day of full contact a week, Tuesday, Wednesday shells, and then Thursday a walkthrough. That sounds about like what you were saying.
I'll give you that. Yeah. And the only caveat that I put to that is I won't play a Saturday game, and then
you're going to have to shift it.
I won't ever run them at 100%. Oh, that's my recommendation, right? I was never the coach. But when the coaches came to me and said, look, what do you think? My recommendation was, let's ramp up and then ramp back down. So if you've got a Friday game, Tuesday we're going to go at about 75%. Now, how do you know what 75% is? Well, you can always see, right? Middle linebacker hits the gap and they're going to shoot out. That's the reason why the 40-yard dash is so important, right? Yeah, how fast can you close that gap? And that's the reason why exercise like squat and deadlift and clean and jerk and all those other things, that's why they're so important. Is so you close that gap fast. So you know when they're running 100%. Don't run 100%. Run about 75%, right? Save the 100% for the game time. So I'd agree with that.
So we may have mentioned this. I think Bill actually said something about it. So a lot of the times, coaches and even athletic trainers will find that when kids aren't going 100% is when they're more likely to get hurt just because
I think they're thinking about it more.
But I think what I've heard too is that's true. But what part of the, especially in a contact sport, is one person is going 100 because he doesn't have the understanding of what 75% is. One kid's going 75. So the running back, you might say, is going 75% up through the middle. Here comes the linebacker who doesn't understand 75. So he goes 100 and just lays the kid out. And so we have an injury. But yes, I think 75% means you're being a little lagging, a little bit, not lazy, but you're just kind of going through the motions quickly. So are you anticipating the hit as well and that kind of stuff? But I mean, research wise, I don't know what the injury rates are, but I have heard that as well anecdotally, that, you know, injury rates increases at a slower speeds. And I think some coaches turn that into, that's why we're going to hit all the time because injury rates are higher at 75%.
If I had the perfect setting where I get to make all the decisions, mine would be the full speed tackling drills would be controlled, mm-hmm. to where they actually learn how to tackle. Mm-hmm. And then when you do the team part where you're going 100%, you still don't take them down.
Mm-hmm. Can I say something? That. I agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
This is my opinion only, solely the opinion of Dr. Martin Oblak, is that I don't believe in, and I understand where Dr. Yellen's coming from, is that condition the body to hit, but how do you condition the body to take hits?
They got to take a hit.
They're going to take a hit. But what happens when you take hits is you're going to increase the risk for injury. But I, at the same time, the caveat to that is I understand exactly what he's saying is psychologically, you have to know what's coming, because if you go into a game, never have gone full speed, you're going to take one hit and you're like, that was not what I was expecting. I'm going to be timid. Next time I go up through the B gap, I'm going to be.
Or like this, take your varsity guy and make him go against a kid that played freshman ball last year, JV, and you make him, you're going to go against him. Instead
right, we're going to
take your ones against
up.
Your ones. Because
toughen the kid
ones.
Up is exactly. Yeah. But I'm with you. I'm on the side of I think fundamentals over and over and over are more productive. And that's, again, why I say I really am now curious on what the research, if there's been any research in that, is does hitting every day translate to success or injury rates compared to non-hitting or very limited hitting. But I'm of your mindset. I think very controlled situations are going to be, and that's, again, this is my opinion. There's no basis for this other than just my thoughts.
Empirical evidence as a clinician. That's your evidence. That's
I'd love to have some coaches come tell me, how do you teach freshman football kids how to tackle correctly when you don't have pads on? How do you teach
I'll
them?
I'll tell you.
You should get the upper level kids that actually know how to tackle, mm-hmm. to demonstrate it correctly.
And that's a good point. And from an injury aspect as well, coaches took a sports medicine course making these in a small school that doesn't have a full-time athletic trainer, you know, we really have to be careful what we're doing. And that's a good point, is take the kids that know what they're doing, or even have them demonstrate, have the top level, the two or three star individual go against another two or three star individual that knows what they're doing, that can take the hit. Don't put them up against the freshman, and don't just tell the freshman, here's what you do. Put your face on the shoulder pad and drive him in and stomp your feet.
I mean, I know they do the repetition where they have them line up facing each other and go through.
And lift them up in the air. I did that in high school. I hated that.
Yeah, but you know what it really comes down to? It comes down to, again, body kinesthetics,
right,
proprioception, these kids understanding where their bodies are in space. And we use this as clinicians. We use this all the time. We use a word called biofeedback in rehab, mm-hmm, right? It's this body positioning. It's body proprioception. It's this kinesthetic awareness. And so when we're teaching these kids how to hit, butt down, face up, look at what you're hitting. Well, these are awkward positions to be in. But if you constantly understand where your body is. Now, I'm going to go back. I'm going to date myself 20 years. My football coach was brilliant. I mean, we thought that, you know, we thought that he was nuts. But he had all of the linemen take ballet. And there we were on our tippy toes. We looked like a bunch of hippopotamuses and tutus. But there we were. And, you know, at first we laughed about it. And what that translated into was we're now able to move at 250, 300 pounds through this line. And we're able to move pretty gracefully because we have a lot more body awareness, right? Now we know it as proprioception and this kinesthetic awareness. And so when you're conditioning these kids to hit and hit properly, it's the ability to, you know, first thing you start working on, show me how to squat. Show me how you do an appropriate squat. That's not on your tippy toes. That's not on your heels. It's on your midfoot. Your center of gravity is where it needs to be. You drop your butt down. Your hips are in the right place. And that's where we start fundamentally. You're not going to hit anybody or anything for the first couple of weeks. You're just going to be working on, you know, the right fundamentals. Then we're going to put somebody in front of you. And let's see how you interact with that. And we're only going to put somebody in front of you just so you have a visual. You have a point of reference, point of contact. And you don't see that. And I think part of that is coming from society. I think part of that is coming from what, you know, parents and kids see on ESPN and all these other sports networks. And I see that, you know, and I really applaud, you know, these kids. I call them kids, right? They came out of college and they got, you know, they went to the draft, the NFL draft, and in one day, these kids are multimillionaires. Congratulations. Now, let's see if you can hold on to it. And let's see if all that training and preparation helped you or if it hurt you. And so, you know, it's a total paradigm shift in thought of we're going to work on fundamentals first. We're going to teach you how to squat. We're going to teach you how to deadlift. We're going to teach you how to do all these other things so that those muscles and joints that you're using are strong enough to endure what it is that you're supposed to be doing. Then we're going to teach you how to, you know, work with somebody in front of you as a point of reference. And what's really interesting is that football is about the only sport that we don't do that. Baseball, I'll put you in front of a batting cage so you can see what a 60, 70, 80 mile an hour fastball looks like. And you get to swing and you work on your timing, right? And then we do it in soccer. Hey, look, this is all, and we do it in basketball, but we don't do it in football. And even if I take other like sports like football where it's high impact, high collision, and again, take the difference between collision and contact, hockey, rugby, Australian rules football, they're always working on fundamentals, always. But in American football, we just don't do it.
All right, so let's go back to your Masters of Athletic Training at U of H. What was the website for that again?
www.hhp.uh.edu/MAT. And I want to thank the hashtag TheSMB for allowing us to be on the show where you can reference the Master of Athletic Training website at www.hhp.uh.edu/MAT.
All right, so we're talking about how we as athletic trainers should be able to teach them these things, or we should be able to worm our way into the program with the coaches to encourage them to do the proper techniques, to encourage them to only hit once a week, and, you know, and Dr. Yellen's case at 75% max, and you know Dr. Knobloch's case 1 day full speed. Either way, if you're only hitting game day and 1 day a week, how do we? Do y'all have something in your coursework that's going to tell them how to best work your way into that situation?
That's a really good question, right? And I think this is going to be an educational concept called learning over time. And we see this all the time, right? So we're going to have these students come in, and the first time that coaches are notorious for this. I think in order to be a coach, I think you go through specific training. And you have to take yelling 101, yelling 200, yelling 300, and yelling 400, mm-hmm. right? Because that's mostly
and
what the coaching
cussing 304.
And cussing 304, right. And then you take a course in your senior year called, give them the dirty look. And
pressure 101.
Right, instill pressure 101. And then finally, as your graduate thesis, it is called temper tantrum, 602. And so now what ends up happening is that the students are going to have to learn how to interact. So we've all been in this situation where coach comes up to me. We need this kid back now. No, I understand. No, I don't think you understand. We need him back right now. This is a championship game. No, I get it. And I'm going to get him back as soon as I possibly can. But you're not going to pressure me in doing it. And so it's this... it's situational in nature. So they're going to have some experiences in Dr. Knobloch's first class in emergency medicine where they're going to learn some things of how to interact in emergency situations. They're going to see it again during their clinical rotations. They're going to see it again during organization, administration for athletic training, where we're going to talk about, how do you network? How do you, gain stakeholder buy-in? How do you do all those other things? And then throughout time, in your orthopedic classes, and again, always being reinforced in your clinical rotations, how are you going to be able to react in these situations? And when the coach tells you to do something, are you going to do it? And the example that I always give is this. You have a situation where you know medically this person cannot perform. They should be disqualified from participation. Now, let's take it one step further where something happens to this particular athlete or patient, whatever you want to call it. When they come back and sue, and they will, by the way, it's going to be a shotgun lawsuit where they're going to go after everybody. When they come back and they go to strip the coach of all his initials and credentials, or all her initials and credentials, they don't have any. But when they come back and they say, hey, athletic trainer XYZ, you violated the NATA code of ethics, you violated the BOC standards for professional practice, you violated the Texas State athletic trainer, you are now negligent, you're toast. And all those letters and all those initials that you work for are gone. You can no longer practice, ever. And so, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, one of the things you asked about, how do we teach that? And one of the things I've always told my students is that I am fully cognizant that the coach is under pressure. I respect what he or she can handle, how she can handle the pressure. And, I understand the game's on the line. And I always use the worst case scenario, which is getting their bell rung. And they will come up and they'll say, I need this kid. And I've only had it happen one time, and it really was a short conversation. It was just, coach, he's done. It was a football player, and I locked the helmet in the trunk, and it was the end of this. And he didn't challenge me, but he said, hey, I really need him. Can he go or not? And I said, coach, let me do my evaluation. But back to what I was saying is I understand the pressure these coaches are under. Like parents calling them because their kid's the superstar and they're not playing enough. they've got the media, they've got newspaper articles printed about their philosophy. I fully get that, and I respect that, and I have the utmost respect for coaches that do that. What they will say is that my job is on the line as a coach. My job is on the line. I need this kid. My response to that is, coach, his life is in my hands. His life is on the line for me. I'm not risking that. And I say worst case scenario, the bell rung, a possible brain injury. I'm going to do a full evaluation. I don't care at that point. And the thing I like about our profession is that we have the backing that we are taking care of their health. There's no career on the line. There's no financial gain out of it for us. It's that kid's future is in my hands. I have that backing. So if when I get challenged, I have that as an excuse, is I wanted to make sure this kid will be able to function fully the rest of his life. Coaches don't have that. That yes, their job is on the line if they don't win this game. But is one kid out of 11 in football going to make that big difference? It could. You never know. It's happened before. But I tell them, you know, the first thing the students, you be respectful. Do not, and when I was in grad school, my head trainer told me, or told a group of us a story, or not story, but just an expression. When you're a student, you do whatever you're told. Yes, sir, I will do that. When you're a fresh licensee, just licensee or certified, those individuals are usually the most challenging. They will front them the most. Coach, I'm certified. I'm licensed. I just went to school for 5 years. You don't tell me what to do. And what you'll learn over time is that as you get older, it becomes, coach, I'll take care of it. There's no confrontation. You're not doing what you're told. And I like that understanding. And I want the students to understand that as soon as you get out of school, is that you just need to calmly tell the coach, coach, this individual's future is in my hands right now, his health. You want to mess with that, tell the athletic director to get me off the field, because I will do whatever I'm told if that's the case. But I am going to do my job right now to make sure this individual walks, functions cognizantly the rest of his life or her life.
Well, they also can say, that is my job. My job is to take care of the athlete. My job is not to determine whether we win or lose.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
My job is to the health care of the athlete.
That's what I was saying about our profession, is we have health care on our minds. It's not wins or losses. It's not state tournament, nothing. We have the backing that what I'm doing is taking care of this person's health. Just like you go to a doctor. You wouldn't go to a doctor, go voluntarily to your doctor and say, I'm here, but I want you to do this. Doctor's not going to do that. I mean, you know, in some cases they would, but it's just like when they come to you, they see you as a colleague most likely, because you know you work with them every day. They know you on a personal basis. They probably think that, hey, I want this person knows me. I want them to do this for me. And I want my students to understand that you are trained. You have gone through this 2 years of a master's degree, or if you're practicing, you've gone through 4 years of undergrad to make those decisions for this person's health. What would you do if it was your child? Would you want somebody to give in to the coach to say, I need him in the game. His bell's been rung. I really think we can win this game. And then he's a running back and he goes up the middle and is knocked unconscious, second impact syndrome. I remember Matt Schultz, I think was his name, or Schultz was the kid in Washington, ended up getting sued, the school district, $126 million or something like that, for lifetime care for this individual, plus the damages and everything. But when you ask, how do you teach that? It's a concept. It's not a recipe. You can't do this. It's just the concept of do it professionally. You make the best decision, but given the evidence. And if you're unsure about, and I've done this before, I've made some, they didn't end up being bad decision, but I questioned myself later as why did I do that? One time I told the coach, it was a junior varsity game. Kid was a great running back or a great quarterback. And I said, I will let him play on the one condition. He hands the ball off every time. There's no, the first time he makes any contact with any opposing player, he's out of the game. Do you agree? And it was because the evidence I had, he was fine, but I didn't want him to take another hit because I didn't want it to progress. And the coach was great with that. But, you know, I wouldn't do that again, I don't think. I think I'd just stick to my guns and say he's out. But I think if you can take the evidence and make the coach understand you don't care what happens in 5 days about your wins and losses. Tell you what, if you want to put in the paper that the athletic trainer held the kid out and that's why we lost the game, put that in there. I don't care. But I will feel confident. I will sleep at night knowing that this kid's going to be fine, or this kid's getting the best medical care he can. And I think that's part of the athletic trainer's job, is to make that connection with the coaching staff, build the rapport, build it with your administrators. And when you have that and you have that respect, I don't think you'll have those situations. And I've after leaving the full-time job and going back to clinical work, I did a lot of private schools, and they never had an athletic trainer before. And it was just this world of just, I mean, I would walk up to them and they'd say, the coaches would say, what do you need? I was just, you know, his ankle's sore. I'm going to try and get him ready by halftime. It was very different in that situation. And they were very respectful, but I know at big time colleges or big time high schools and colleges, coaches are going to say, my job is on the line. It's like, well, my future's on the line. This kid's health is on the line in my hands. This is what I'm doing. I'm making decisions. I'm credentialed. You didn't pass any tests to become a coach. You may have been successful in college or whatever, but I think if you just if you teach the students to understand that you are the decision maker, you're the doctor unofficially, because we all can associate what a doctor does. He makes the decision, and that's the diagnosis you get. We're doing it in an acute setting a lot of times in football or in basketball or somewhere on the playing field. You have to stick to your guns, and you can never give in to pressure. But the best way to do that is you build rapport, and you approach it in a very non-confrontational way, and just say, "Coach, his or her future is in my hands. I've got to make the decision. This is what I feel is best." I don't know any athletic trainer that has ever spited a coach. I'm going to hold the kid out just to make you mad. I hope that's never happened. That's unethical, and they should be their license should be removed if that happened, or their certification. So hopefully we're putting out individuals that aren't going to do that anyway, but I think that's where a lot of it comes from. You teach them just how to get coaches to understand this is a health condition, not a win loss, job loss, that kind of stuff. So long-winded answer to your question.
Bill, you brought up something really interesting. I follow that same philosophy. I was always asked by people, like, aren't you a fan of whatever team I was with? Oh yeah, I hope they do really well. But if they win or where they lose, that I don't want to downplay the importance of that, but it's irrelevant to me. I'm going to place my victories on, did we get everybody back okay?
Hey, did we make it through the game with no injuries?
Yeah, and you know what? Yeah, if we did make it with no injuries, or if we did make it with some injuries, what kind are they? Yeah. Are some of these career ending, or some of these life ending, or some of these
Were they preventable?
Yeah,
is there anything we could have done differently?
Right, and I always left the game like, you guys got smoked, 73-0. Yeah, but everybody's alive and they're healthy and they're able to play again next week. Yeah. And that's
with y'all's course and everything y'all are putting out athletic trainers, it's going to be a lot easier for them to fit in settings, in my opinion, because the profession is a little more, everybody's more aware of our profession and what our credentials are and everything. So really, every year it's easier as far as the pressure goes. But I remember back when I first started, in the first 10 years, when athletic training was still, in the 80s, I had head coaches call me, I baby the kids and I did all this, that you're like a mother to them and all this. I've had those things. Well, I don't have any experience, but it's totally different now. I mean, I've got, 30 plus years, so I haven't had a coach yet tell me that yet.
Well,
now,
I think the coaches, I always looked at coaches like, almost like a lions or tiger, they're going to go sniff you out.
Oh yeah.
And they're going to figure out, it's like a pack of dogs. They're going to go and they're going to figure out which the weak one is. And then they're going to go attack that.
Yeah. And I had to break in every head coach has never had an athletic trainer.
Yeah,
before.
That's right. And so part of that is that, you're going to show, hey, look, I'm going to go toe to toe with you. And, boy, just like Dr. Knobloch said, I need this kid in. That's great. I'm going to do my evaluation and I'm going to tell you whether this kid is qualified to go or not. And if he is, great. And there are going to be stipulations to that. And if he's not, you're going to deal with my diagnosis and we're going to move on.
Yeah. Now you've even had several years since Jeremy's been here, and I don't think Jeremy knows this, but I've had coaches come up to me and ask me, well, do you agree with what Jeremy said?
Yeah.
And I says, he's an athletic trainer. I agree wholeheartedly with what Jeremy says.
If you made his diagnosis, then I agree with it. And I'll never – and there's a time and a place
to do
that.
Most of the times we concur – like, okay, you look at it, and then I look at it.
Yeah, and there's a time and a place to do it. Listen, we'll take it back in the locker room. And amongst the clinicians, right? And I've had it where it's like, look, do you agree with this diagnosis? Or, listen, you've got your sports medicine team. You go back in the locker room. You're going to take your athletic trainers, your physician, and we're going to look at it, and we're going to, break it down a little bit more and see what it is. And we'll come back with the right answer.
Yeah, I like that too. I like that. We've been doing that more in football games when we do have like Dr. Crumby at the sidelines. He does not like to evaluate a knee or anything on the sidelines in front of the stands.
Dr.
He'd rather go back.
Of ours too. That's great. He's a great physician.
Yeah.
Great
he's business. Very good.
One thing I think too,
he likes going back to the dressing room.
I think a lot of the assistants coming out are obviously younger. They probably majored in physical education. They probably had some kind of sports medicine. So I think when you talk about our professions more well known, there's always going to be that upper echelon of, high school older coaches that grew up in the 70s.
Most of them are retired.
Most of them good. But I think there's one of the things when I was teaching to the undergraduates, I my favorite part of the intro to sports medicine class was liability. I would just throw facts out there left and right because a lot of people in there were coaching. They wanted to go into coaching. And it wasn't just, you should do this, you should do this. It was more of, if you don't do this, here's the consequence. $1 million lawsuit. You will be blacklisted in the coaching profession because you were one of those that withheld water during practice and you had a heat stroke or something. And so I love that liability aspect from an education side because that's the facts.
Your teaching certificate.
Yeah. In my teaching of everything, I love to show kids real world situations. It's yes, you know, here's how you run a budget. Well, in the real world, this is how much you're going to get. Can you make it work or whatever? But liability was fun because these guys are like, whoa, you know, I didn't realize that, you know, and then I think a lot of it switched to you're hurt. Oh, go to the athletic trainer. I have no idea what's going on. But in the old days, it's like you're hurt. Well, get back out there before I, you know, make you run 10 laps.
Throw some dirt on it. Besides getting it dirty, I'm not quite sure exactly what that does.
You could do that when you're doing the budgets, speaking of budgets. Yeah. You could do this in your course or your class with them. Have them research how much school districts get on athletic training budgets.
Exactly.
How much does colleges get? Uh-huh. Which colleges get how much? Junior colleges get this much.
Exactly.
And then say, okay, now let's say you were at a high school that got 12,000. Okay. You know, how would you budget then? And then you go to another school that you get half that.
Mm-hmm. And you have the same number of athletes.
Athletes.
My first job was a junior college. My athletic training budget, but excluding salaries and insurance premium, was $3,013. And you had no choice. That's it. And this was in 1998. And then
boxes of tape.
Yeah, I mean, I bought hockey tape. I mean, what was really neat is that I went back to some of my undergraduate about things like getting things donated. I went to the hospital. They donated ace wraps because they use them and throw them away. I went to the grocery store. I used vegetable bags for my ice bags. I bought 3 or 4 cases of hockey tape. And it makes you think because it was great. It was funny the way my undergrad head athletic trainer that taught the class said, you see on TV, you see these toothpaste commercials. They always put this big old long flowing thing of toothpaste on the toothbrush. That's how it looks on TV. Or that's how it looks, you know, when you're learning in the real world. What do? You put a little dab on there and that's it. He said it's the same thing from a budget. You know, they teach you have all this money to buy all this equipment, but in the real world, go to HISD. What do they give out? Pasadena ISD. How much do they really give you? And this is how are you going to make it work? You cannot go to them and say, I need more money. Unless it's for healthcare. You know, we have a medical emergency and we need, but what also happens is, football goes over budget. You have some money left in your budget. And this has happened to me. They saw you had money left. Well, another sport at the time had went over budget. Whose money did they take? The one that hadn't spent their money. So I lost more money because I hadn't spent all my money at that time. And it was very frustrating. But that's why I'm again going
basically,
off on tangents.
They need to know when they go to high school, if you don't spend your money, you lose it. It doesn't carry over the next year.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. There is no carryover.
And the AD on campus decides where that money that's left over goes.
And one of the things I want to do with our MAT students is I want to have them, it's during our first 2 weeks of orientation, I'm going to have them create their resume towards the job they want. So that way, when they graduate, if they want to be a high school athletic trainer, they're going to create the resume, what experience they have. And some of that experience, hopefully, is rotating through doing rotations at high schools. So you guys can sit there and talk to them. They're like, well, do you have any coach table? We don't use coach. We use Jaybird because we can't afford Zonas or whatever. And so they see that, okay, things are different here than I was used to when I was doing a U of H rotation in the athletic department. It's not the same. Your training room is as big as the supply closet, but you guys make it work very effectively. And so that's what I want them to do is to get the experiences so that when they go there, they're not thrown in this culture shock.
Adapt.
You have no choice.
And you know, the best athletic trainers are the ones that
improvise.
Well, yeah. You know, I'm given this box of tape that's been sitting in a closet that's been 120 degrees for the last 3 years. And the tape, it sticks here and it doesn't stick there. And, you know, you're in this really poor school district where we don't have any MRIs or we can't get to an x-ray. And so guess what, man? You got to be able to make it work and you got to be able to improvise. And you know what? Your ears and your brain and your eyes are the MRI. It is the x-ray. And that this tape that you have to work with, or, you know, all the bargaining and bartering that you had to do, this is all going to pay off. And those, in my experience, those are the best athletic trainers because they can function in any environment. Some of my biggest concerns is that some of these students are coming out of these really big programs that are exposed to all these incredible things that you see on ESPN and all that stuff.
Indoor swimming pool.
Yeah, then they can't they can't operate.
Indoor football practice.
Yeah, I mean, they can't. Well, I mean, they can't operate in a setting. You know, if we put them out in one of these poor, you know, areas, they can't operate because they're not used to, you know, really using their hands. And it, that is no different than the medical students that we're putting out and the PT students that we're putting out. It's the same. You know, technology's really helped us, but don't let technology interfere with the fact that you are a good diagnostician.
Fundamentals.
Yeah, fundamentals.
Anatomy doesn't change.
Anatomy's doing the same.
So let me jump in real quick.
Okay. Sorry, Jeremy, we've completely monopolized your show.
I'm sure we've set the new record, by the way.
Yeah, by the way, how long are we going for now?
No, last time was 2 hours and like 14 minutes, I think.
Where are we at right now?
2:03, according
we
to
got
this.
It. Oh, dude. Hey, 12 more minutes, brother. We got it.
That's easy. That's easy.
We apologize to the listeners.
All right, so Dr. Knobloch, I quoted you, but I don't think I quoted you correctly. I said the ATs that usually get into fights with coaches are the new ones who need to prove themselves.
It's not, I don't know if it's prove it. It's more of, I just passed a test. You don't tell me what to do. Well, and that was brought up to me.
I already tweeted it. So it's, and more importantly,
that's okay.
Hashtag the SMB.
More importantly, again, that's Bob Marley hashtag. Retweeted that.
Oh, really?
So I mean, now it's official. Bob Marley retweeted it. So
since Bob, since Bob is listening, and I know now about 90,000 people, I'll give you the context. I was in grad school and
you can't go back now.
No, I'm not changing it. There, I'm not changing my story, but that was told to me by our head trainer. He said, when you're a student, you do whatever you're told because you have no credentials. You have no power or anything. When you pass your test, everybody's told you, you are now an expert. Mm-hmm. And when a coach challenges you, one of the first things is, I've seen it, but I'm not, this isn't my quote, but the head trainer said what he was trying to get across to us is don't go out there. But what he's seen, he was telling us as graduate assistants, that he has seen it in graduate assistants because most of them just pass their certification test, is they are the most confrontational people because they just passed their test. They're not going to have a coach, a non-certified licensed coach, tell them how to do it. So they will get in their face and say, I am certified as an athletic trainer. I went through school, whatever else. You're not telling me what to do. And what I hope our students see is that, you know, that's true. They're not credentialed. They're not highly trained in
to a point, because if that head football coach is the athletic director,
then they're in
trouble.
Then they're in trouble. I want them to do it from an educational side. Coach, you know, I've seen this before. This is what I want to do. And try and skip that, because what he then said was that as you get older, you become much more non-confrontational. It's more of coach, I'll take it. It became a coach, I'll take care of it. And I hope our students see that and gain that. So, and I remember being that when I finally passed my certification test.
That's abrasive.
Boom. This is awesome. Mm-hmm. I know as much as 30,000 other people. I'm on their level now. I wasn't just a student, and I can see where it comes from. And it made a lot of sense. What he was saying is that the most confrontational athletic trainers, the ones that just got their credentials, because now they have this power, and now it's not a power trip, but they have the ability to make these decisions. And they're not going to have somebody come in and tell them, you know, what to do or how to treat this injury. And you can easily say, coach, get out of my face, back away. Or you can say, coach, I'll take care of it.
Just tell them, don't react.
It's a good point.
Yeah. Don't react. And
because
a lot
that coach
of it
is not going to probably back down to that. If I'm not picking on coaches, but if you confront a coach, they've dealt with enough stuff with the media and parents that they are ready to battle.
Especially in a game setting, because they're already... yeah.
Oh, they're already at a heightened...
They're already... The blood pressure is so high.
And that's why I say I respect them for that. They're the center of attention. They're a lot of their reputation's on the line. Their livelihood may be on the line. I respect that. But when it comes to injuries, the kid's health is in my hands, not the coach's. Because like Dr. Yellen said, and like I said last week, but that somebody sues, the coach is not going to say, you know what, guys, I'll take the responsibility,
be the trainer alone.
No. It's going to say, well, he's the medical professional or she's the medical. They made the decision. They put him back in.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to do that. So it's
But hopefully your young athletic trainer, when they're hired by that person or that athletic director or whatever, they do ask them a bunch of questions mm-hmm. about what is your philosophy,
yes,
and how are you going to respond, and
what happens when I hold a kid out?
And I think it's a matter of showing them all those different situations, as they're coming up, so that they are prepared to deal with
role play.
And those are all really good teaching.
And we
tools.
Talked about, hopefully we can have something like an interview seminar for our students, because that's good. Questions going to come up is, mm-hmm. Star quarterback's always the example. Star quarterback just got hit in the head, and it's the state championship game. What do you do?
High school setting.
Yeah.
Senate bill.
Yeah, I mean, what you do is you make the best decision possible. If you need to hold him out, what I'd do is I'd either hold the helmet or lock it in a trunk and take the key. I mean, everybody has their own philosophy, but that way there's no sneaking him back around. One time when I was doing contract work, I gave the helmet to a student that wasn't even a student trainer, it was like a manager, and I said, you do not give this helmet to anybody. 5 minutes later, helmet's gone. I said, where is it? Well, the kid asked for it back. He wasn't in the game. But I made an error in judgment, and I gave it to a student who was, from a hierarchy, the football players were all above him. So he just told him, give me my helmet now. And that was the end of it, and made that mistake and never, luckily he didn't go back in the game. But that's exactly what you said, is do an interview session. How do they know what's going to be asked of them? And
I learned to hold the helmet because I'll never forget. I told them number 68 was out. And they went in the locker room, and number 68 changed his jersey and came out as number 65. And I was like, where's 68? Oh, 68's out.
And if something happened, it would have been his fault.
And I was looking around, and I realized 68 is now 65. And so I took the helmet. And that was probably, 15 years ago. And from that point on,
always take the helmet.
Hey, listen, you cannot play. The other thing I learned along the way, and this only happens in high school, is that I have been known to walk on the football field and go talk to the white cap. I disqualified this kid. What do you mean? The coach went around me. I disqualified him because of a suspected concussion or whatever it is. And the white cap will stop. They'll stop the game. And I've had situations where it's like, you got to be kidding me. Whose side are you on? As the athletic trainer, my job is to protect the patient, to the point of we went back to the freshman football player. This kid really took a hit, and he was out of sorts, and he was not prepared to, and he was just emotionally not prepared, and he's crying, and the coach would come back, and the coach starts calling him names. You this and you that, you better get back in because you're this and you're that, and okay. And it's not really helping. The kid really doesn't want to go back in, and I asked him privately, do you want to go back in? He said, no, I don't. I'm scared, and I don't want to go back in. And the coach comes back, and he says, look, is the kid ready to go or not? I said, you know what, coach? I think the kid's got anaxilhelia. What? I made it up. Yeah. What? He's got anaxilhelia. Oh my God. I've never heard of that. Well, that's how severe it is.
I'm stealing that.
Yeah, that's how severe it is.
It's rare, but
yeah, it's rare. But I've got, so I need to take him to the locker room, and I think I need to, and so you know what? I called his pediatrician and I let him know. I said, you know what? From a physical standpoint, from an injury standpoint, he's 100%. But psychologically and emotionally, he's not prepared to deal with this. And so, you need, just to let you know that you're going to go look at this, and you're going to clear him from a physical issue, from a physical standpoint. But this isn't a physical injury. This is a situation where he's just not prepared. Yeah, anaxilhelia. I mean, and you learn this throughout time. And the other thing that Dr. Knobloch said too was, over time, I became a lot more calm, because you become more confident in your skills as clinician. You become more confident in your ability to deal with confrontation. You become more confident in your ability that, ultimately I'm going to make this recommendation, because that's really what it is. It doesn't matter if you're a physician. It doesn't matter if you're an athletic trainer. Yeah, we're going to diagnose an injury, but really it's a recommendation of, this is what I think it is, and this is what I think you should do. And okay, well, they're going to listen or not. Now, ultimately your job is to protect that patient. Protect the patient. All right. Are we breaking some records here?
We still got another couple minutes, I think. All right, so Mitch Gill, I'm not sure if he's listening live or if he's just responding on Twitter. And he says, Mike Hopper said something about, he had a coach that was really good and said, if Doc Hop, because Hopper, I guess,
sure.
Doc Hop says it, then it's final. And so Mitch Gill said that if the coaches understand you aren't going to back down on your decision, they usually respect you more.
Correct.
Do you think that's...
I think it's a proactive education and communication that this is who I am. This is what I am as an athletic trainer. this is, and I usually go all the way back to, and you talk about fundamentals. Here's the definition of an athletic trainer. Here's the scope of practice of athletic training. Here are the educational competencies in athletic training. Here are the content areas that I've had as an athletic trainer. Here are my years of experience and the situations that I've been in as an athletic trainer. And what that does is that you're finding some common ground with the coach or whoever it is. You know, it's maybe the general manager of Ford, or it may be the admiral that you're working with at the Navy, or it may be the CEO of Disney, or whatever it is, that you say, hey, look, I am a highly trained medical professional, and this is the education that I've gone through. And you're right. There are times where the coach is going to try to go manipulate and it wouldn't matter if you're an athletic trainer, physician, PT, it doesn't matter. But the coach is going to go try to manipulate. Why? Because they're going to try to get their way. That's what they want. They want their way. And that when you're able to stand up to the person and say, look, and calmly stand up to the person and say, look, let's say this kid comes to you, you know, four times over the next, you know, week. Do you think they can get back in? I don't know. I don't have a crystal ball with me. Well, let's say, you know, we sit this kid for the second quarter. Do you think he'll go back in? You know, it really depends on whether they're able to pass my test or not. Well, geez, he only got his bell rung. You mean tinnitus, this high-pitch ringing in the head that you hear because of some sort of traumatic brain injury? You know, or all these different things. And so it's a matter of proactive education. It's a matter of making sure that everybody respects one another. And you're right. The way it should be is the athletic trainer made the diagnosis, and that's law. And I've been very vocal before where I've made the diagnosis and this is how it's going to stay. And the only person that's going to overrule me is the physician. And the physician's not going to do that because they have trust and confidence in the athletic trainer. Right now, let's say you go and you're suspicious of a torn ACL, and you go get the MRI and you know what? It's not torn. Okay, so be it. But those are rare instances. Right. And okay, listen, you know, and that's why we say, and I've always said, I'm licensed and certified to practice. I'm not licensed and certified to perfect.
One thing I always used.
You can steal that one too, Bill.
Was I said, I don't know. I tell the coach up front, I don't know anything about coaching. I don't know what the best play is on this. I'm not going to tell you how to do your job. Please don't tell me how to do mine. Understand. And back to the question, I think as long as they understand you're doing it for the health of the kid, the future ability of the kid. Wins and losses mean nothing to you. You don't care if we win or lose. You care because you want the kids to win. You want the coaches to be successful. But you're not going to make any decisions based on whether it gets you a win or a loss. You're going to do it based on the health of the individual. And going back to what Bill said, is maybe when you set up an interview, ask, can coaches be on my interview committee? Because I want them to understand my philosophies right out the bat. And if it's a situation where you're in there and the coach is telling you that wins and losses, us getting the state championship is a huge deal here. Maybe that's not the best situation to be in employment wise, but you know, I've always said, I don't know. I understand football. I understand basketball, but I'm never going to tell a coach how to do his job. Why should he or she be telling me how to do mine? Credentials, experience, training, all that is in my background. What is in yours? Well, you know a lot about coaching. You're a very successful coach. Coach the game. Kids are getting hurt in your drills, not mine. So I think, yeah, I don't want to say that confronting them, you know, fronting them right off the bat is going to make them back off. It depends on the personality of the coach too.
Yeah.
You may get one that fronts you right back and all of a sudden you've got a bad working relationship. That coach, what if he's the AD? What if he has the AD's his best bud? You know, you put yourself in a bad situation. Fronting, I just don't think is ever a good situation. You may have to do it once to get everybody to calm down or something in an injury situation. But, you know, I like to think athletic trainers are very professional. They know how to keep everybody in a good working environment too.
So. There's one quote that it kind of stuck with me because I was a dummy and made this mistake. But if you make a speech when you're angry, it'll be the best speech you'll ever regret.
Yeah, that's right.
because I did that. And I was like, oh, I just learned about not speaking and not reacting when you're angry. But you know, it's just one of those things. You kind of have to go through the. Hopefully, somebody listening can learn from our mistakes, my mistakes, anyways. Mm-hmm. You know, you guys are perfect. Is that what you just said? So,
I heard you can find the transcript at hashtag the SMB.
I heard another similar quote. It's nothing brings out the truth like anger and alcohol. And when you're angry, you'll say things that you will regret. But you said him.
And does that mean you're drinking at work?
You
too,
got him out there. No, it was somebody was arrested and they made.
Coach, he's got a concussion. Let me have the scotch.
Made some comments, but nothing brings out, like, it goes back to what you said. Nothing brings out the truth like anger. When you're mad, you'll tell so and so what you really think, but you're going to probably regret that later. So take a step back. Again, get control of the situation if it's an injury and go from there. How many times have you had that in 34 years? You've had. Probably quite a few, and you know it doesn't do any good to get mad. It's just everybody calm down. If you can clear the individual out. If you don't need to be here, back off. You know, I understand the parents screaming if their kids hurt, and you know you need help, you need 911 or whatever. But you've got to get control of that situation. The coach has no bearing on that situation. Get them gone. You know, if you're calling 911, their kid's not going to play in the game. So get them out of there. So, that's my opinion.
Well, we have crossed 218 on the recording.
Yes.
So if we're just shooting for records,
world record.
then we can end it here. But I mean, if you got more,
I could talk for 10 hours.
The fourth or fifth one of these, you're gonna need to clear the day because if we're setting records every time, it's gonna be a challenge. But
see, but that's the awesome part is I can just kind of cut it in half and I get to put two weeks worth of work in one day.
Well, then you could also have stay tuned for part two next week if we cut it right before some really good topic. Everybody's like anticipating the next topic.
All right, so next time you guys come, I'll have to remind you right at about an hour mark. All right, do something dramatic.
There you go. Yes. Make a really controversial statement.
Well, and look, we really appreciate the opportunity to come over here and speak. And this promotes, you know, athletic training. It promotes our athletic training program at the University of Houston, which you can find at www.hhp.uh.edu/MAT. And you know, it's really great for the entire Houston sports medicine community. And obviously this is reaching out to other athletic trainers and sports medicine professionals across the country. So anytime you want us back, just shoot us an email. Even if it's the day before, let us know and we'll be here. We really appreciate
the day before. Hey, that's what I do.
And if you have any listeners that want a topic covered, we can come up with some way to talk about it.
Yeah, let us know let us know. I think between myself and Dr. Knobloch, we've covered pretty much every aspect of athletic training.
Well, and you got Bill here who's been here long enough.
Bill's back on the mic.
He hasn't covered everything. He's seen everything.
Or we could talk about analexahelia. Yeah. I did put that out on Twitter.
Did you spell it right?
I don't know. It's made up. So
people will be Googling that. They're like, I've never heard of that.
It was really good, too. It was like, God, you know, can this kid get back in or not? You know, what's the deal? And I said, you know, Coach, I got to tell you, it was bad. He's got analexahelia. What?
Yeah, but Coach doing this.
Yeah,
I know. I spell that.
We're going to have some student now going to the head trainer saying, there's some condition called analexahelia. I can't Google it. How rare is this thing?
And the coach is like, I've been coaching for 30 years. I've never heard of something like that. I'm like, well, it's a really rare condition. So I'm going to have to disqualify him. You know, we're going to put him right back in his street clothes. I don't think he should go back in. Not until we do some more tests. Oh, yeah. And I made sure I spoke to the mom and dad. I said, look, you know, little Billy, little Johnny, he's not ready for this. So I disqualified him. And they were really thankful, right? Thank you very much for doing that. And I really appreciate you protecting my kid. And yeah, that's great. And I called the physician. I said, look, this person's coming to you, and here's the deal. And what'd you diagnose him with? We had a really good working relationship with the physician. What'd you diagnose him with? Analexahelia. What? I just made it up to get the coach off my, you know. So, you know, he's like, how am I going to write that up in the report? Well, you know. So,
awesome.
Athletic training improvisation 101.
Nice. So if nothing else, if you don't learn anything about athletic training from the MAT program, you at least get a couple good laughs, right?
Yeah, that's right.
you should have ended it with like a phobia.
So I think I think we should have. I think honestly we should have like
of athletics.
Yeah, that's right. I think we should have like a athletic training. You should put together like an athletic training story, like a comedic story, and you get all these athletic trainers together, and you just start telling some of these stories because some of them are really funny.
Yeah.
You know, like I remember telling stories about, you know, how'd you know how to disqualify this athlete coming off the football field? Well, you know, I came off and I can see that he was disoriented. So I sat him down. And the first thing you do, right, you can check cranial nerves 2, 3, 4, and 6. Okay. So what do? You put up, you know, how many fingers do I have up? Wednesday. Uh-huh. Well, let's sit for a while. Well, how do you know he needs to sit? Because I asked him how many fingers does he see. He told me Wednesday. So that's, you know, that stories like that, I think, would go a long way. We should put an audiobook together like that.
Okay. All right. Well, we have definitely eclipsed our last total.
Up top. Boom.
And I'm
making it happen.
I'm willing to bet this is probably not the longest one we'll ever have.
Not if you have us back.
Not if you have us back, it won't be.
Because we got a goal to reach.
Okay, so I'll go ahead and close it out. I want to thank the people who help make this possible right now. G-Hats, Greater Houston Athletic Trainer Society, sponsors the CEUs. So for listening to my 10 words and Dr. Yellen and Nabalak's 10,000 words, you can earn some CEUs just for listening. And especially if you tweet during this thing, you get to interact, ask some questions, make your comments. I get to read them online, like I talked about Mike Hoppers or Mitch Gill, or I know I said Alyssa H. She retweeted something. And of course, Bob Marley, world famous Bob Marley, athletic trainer extraordinaire, retweeting and quoting and whatnot. So definitely join in the conversation that way using Twitter, hashtag TheSMB. As always, the PISD Education Foundation, which I believe, I try to set the camera up so it'd catch the background behind Dr. Knobloch and Yellen, but it's just the Gatorade poster. But anyways, behind them is one of the checks for $5,000, which there's two checks for $5,000. Whoa. Bill's going to try and move the camera. All right, so there.
See how fast Bill just moved? That was...
Yeah. That's good. So you can see there's a check for $5,000, another check for $5,000, a check for $3,100, a check for $800. And that's probably not even half of the ones that I've received from them. And so, I mean, a ton of stuff that they've done, donated, supported.
Panoramic view.
That was just like showing half of Dr. Yellen's head. And, so.
This is awesome. This is like when my daughter takes pictures with my smartphone. All right, take a picture. This is my forehead.
Oh. All right, so I'm going to keep going. So the PISD Education Foundation does a lot. And then our website, sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, where I'll have links again. I think I'll have to go back and copy and paste the other one because my students didn't write it in this time. But the link for the Masters of Athletic Training Program at U of H, and really meeting you guys could possibly change what we're doing here with the podcast, some of the stuff we were talking about beforehand, some of the stuff we can grow it, make it more professional. You know, this second half where the students were gone, we're getting to do a little bit more in-depth talking. And so I really look forward to what we possibly can do with a partnership here with you guys.
Us too.
And so I'm super excited. And thanks for being so willing to come out here 2 weeks in a row, the day after I email you, just about anything.
Thanks for inviting us, actually.
Yeah.
I mean, it was nice.
This is great.
What's the best way to know you weren't boring? You get invited back.
Yeah, there you go. And I will say, I looked at I think last time y'all came, y'all asked me how many downloads I had. It was like 500. And then after I released that episode with you guys, I think it was like 800.
Wow.
So either it was a coincidence or you guys, you know, there was a lot of people downloading.
Should I tell you that I kept downloading onto my own computer like 600 times?
Hey, probably ever.
I called my wife and every friend I've ever had. All right, listen, guys, this is what you need to do. No,
I promise I had. I didn't get any emails. So I got on
Facebook.
I didn't say anything controversial, I guess. I haven't got any. Like, what were you taught? That is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. So. That'll probably come out of this show. It's much more informal.
So, again, at PHS Sports Med, so that you can tweet us your comments using hashtag TheSMB. So, at PHS Sports Med is me. That's my own personal one that I use here for the students, for the school, for the broadcast. Google+ is sportsmedicinebroadcast.com, facebook.com/PHS Athletic Training. So, for Jeremy,
Bill,
Dr. Nava,
Dr. Yellen.
That's a wrap.